death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
This is Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news on WGRN 94.1. Well, John Hartman, welcome to the other side of the news. John, of course, writes about politics, among other things, for the Columbus Free Press, and is an astute follower of Ohio politics. So, Trump winning by 8 or so points, same as last time. What does that tell us about Ohio politics?
Well, the people that said that Ohio had become a red state 4 years ago and 2 years ago apparently were correct. I guess Ohio has become more like Indiana than like Michigan or Pennsylvania. And I'm not sure what in the short or even mid-run will change that.
What do you think the reasons are? Why is Ohio, which in 2016... Hillary Clinton was supposed to lose by half a point. She lost by more than 8. And then it gets repeated with Joe Biden, who restores the blue wall of Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. What is it exactly that's going on in Ohio? Is this the revenge of deeply rural Ohio?
Well, I think the phrase that summed it up best, I heard on one of the news, TV news channels a couple months ago, and that is that people in Ohio, the majority of people in Ohio are culturally uncomfortable. And I interpret that to mean that people outside the metropolitan areas don't like the changes that society has undergone in the last 50 years. They're not comfortable with minorities. They're not comfortable with gays. They're not comfortable with people living different lifestyles. They're not comfortable with people that don't go to church. And consequently, I think because many of the leaders and many of the prominent people in the Democratic Party, are, shall we say, more modern than the people in the hinterlands. The people are uncomfortable. Those people are uncomfortable with voting for them. Or, as you know, I live in Delaware County. It's a very ruby red county. I grew up in Ashland County, which used to have a few Democratic office holders, but now is completely run by Republicans. It just seems like people in parts of Ohio are just not comfortable with, they're not comfortable with change, and they're not accepting of people who are different than they are. I think that's very unfortunate. I wish I had an antidote to it. But until people like you and me and other folks are able to figure out how to reach these folks in a manner that they're receptive to, I'm afraid Ohio will continue to be probably become even redder in the future.
Well, some of those Trump supporters weren't comfortable with Mike DeWine or Dr. Amy Acton. Is that? They're not even comfortable with kind of traditional Republican politics. There seems to be some sort of populist uprising going on out there.
Well, that's absolutely correct. And it's interesting if you reflect on the history of Mike DeWine, who was once a U.S. senator, and he was defeated by Sherrod Brown for that Senate seat. I guess it would be 14 years ago. But one of the things that got Mike DeWine in trouble when he was a U.S. senator from Ohio is that he was making deals with moderates. Remember, he belonged to a group of senators. I think they called him the Gang of Eight. There were four Democrats and four Republicans, and they got together and they actually tried to find solutions. you know, things that they could agree on, things that they could do together to, you know, pass legislation that would make the lives of people, particularly people that were challenged, better. And that caused a lot of the conservative Republicans to turn against Mike DeWine and kind of abandoned him when he ran for the Senate for re-election to the Senate. Now, he was able to patch things up with those folks, the right wing of the Republican Party, by taking some horrible positions to get elected attorney general 10 years ago and then governor 2 years ago. But because I think Mike DeWine is a decent human being. He cares about people. He wants to help people that are in need. And that has been shown during the pandemic. And that was shown by his hiring and support of Dr. Acton. I think that this has alienated the hard right Republicans. And they're looking forward to running someone against him in the primary for governor in 2 years if he decides to run for a second term. I think it's conceivable that Mike DeWine will not run for a second term. I think it'd be 75 when he would run for re-election. I think he may decide, especially because this pandemic has been an incredibly taxing experience on all governors, not just DeWine. I think he may decide that you know, he's had enough and step aside. On the other hand, I think Mike DeWine has a pretty a stiff backbone. And I think that, you know, he may decide, you know what, bring it, you know, see if you can knock me off. So I don't, certainly it would help the Democrats if DeWine was primaried. And if there was a big fight within the Republican Party, much like it appears that those two Democrats running for the U.S. Senate in Georgia are being helped by the fighting among the Republicans, you know, between the people that think the election was stolen from Donald Trump and the people that actually believe in the two-party system, people that actually believe in democracy, people that actually believe that the person with the most electoral votes, you know, becomes president. So certainly fighting among the Republicans could be helpful in Democrats. In Georgia, and it could be helpful in Ohio in 2 years.
And the Democratic Party, their chair recently resigned. That does not bode well for shaking up Ohio politics.
Well, I suppose it depends on, you know, I think it, I suppose it depends on who the replacement is. If anybody asks me my opinion, I would say hire someone to be chair, you know, make it more of a courtesy title, and you know, don't pay them $150 or how many $1,000 David Pepper was making. Maybe pay him $1,000 a month, and go out and hire a campaign management firm that might have the savvy and the ability to figure out a way to, you know, elect more Democrats in Ohio. I think that would make more sense than picking someone to do it full time who may or may not know what they're doing, who may or may not get along with the various pressure groups in the Democratic Party, who may or may not be accountable. I think David Pepper tried very hard to be successful. I think he just realized after 5 years that he was, you know, bumping his head up against the wall and that it was not going to get better anytime soon. And that if he ever wanted to run for elective office again, which I believe he does, remember, he ran twice statewide for statewide offices and lost both times. That, you know, he needs to separate himself from being chair of the Democratic Party and perhaps, you know, resurface as a candidate for higher office, perhaps statewide office. I would suggest that David Pepper would be better off to go back to his hometown of Cincinnati, where his family name is a revered name in the Queen City, and where he was once an elected public official. And where the city of Cincinnati is in the throes of various corrupt investigations of elected officials, and maybe throw his hat in the ring for mayor of Cincinnati. And then if he's able to be successful, then that would build him a base that he could try for statewide office again. So he doesn't ask my advice, but that's my advice to David Pepper.
And would he run as a reform anti-corruption candidate? It seems like the corruption charges are so widespread in people who you used to think is reformers.
Well, I think that, I've never read or seen anything about David Pepper that suggests that he's corrupt, that suggests that he's not an above board person. I think his time in the government of Cincinnati and Hamilton County was respectable. So perhaps it would be good for the folks down there to have somebody, who's not, hasn't been a member of the city government for a while. And yet has the wherewithal and the family background that, would make it much more difficult to corrupt him. I mean, the Pepper family is one of the wealthiest families in Ohio. So penny ante kind of deals that are sometimes attractive to politicians would not be something that David Pepper would mess with. He would tell him to go fish.
Is the future of Ohio politics Jim Jordan?
Oh, my God. Well, as I mentioned, I live in Delaware County, and Jim Jordan represents the neighboring county of Union County. So I was just thinking today, oh, my God, what if when they redistrict our congressional districts for 2022, What if Jim Jordan is given Delaware County as part of his new district? Now, it is interesting because Jim Jordan has been talking about running for governor. This is a very interesting ploy on his part. In fact, this is something that Sherrod Brown used to do when he was a congressman from the Cleveland area. When reapportionment would be coming up, Sherrod Brown would talk about running for governor. And the reason he did that is he wanted to scare the governor into not giving him a bad district. And so I think Jim Jordan is just playing a little game with Mike DeWine in that if you don't give me a respectable district, I'll run against you. I would call that idle chatter because I think DeWine would take Jordan to the woodpile in a gubernatorial primary. But nonetheless, Jim Jordan has to be feared because he has an enormous war chest. He probably has $10 million on ice or could quickly raise it with a few phone calls. So if he is redistricted, he will start any campaign for Congress in 2022 with way more money than anybody that he might be running against.
Well, he signed on to the Texas lawsuit and really emerged as a national figure as one of the great defenders, some would say sycophant, of President Trump.
It's rather amazing that, and even though he's had respectable competition in the last two congressional races, and I've paid a little bit of attention to both of those races in his district, but it just seems to be impossible to make a dent in his popularity in his congressional district. It's very interesting. He runs television advertisements that say that show like pictures of him growing up and pictures of him as a young man. And then at the end, it says he's one of us. You know, they don't talk about his crazy positions. They talk about, oh, he's a local kid from Urbana that came to Ohio State and made good and got himself elected to the legislature and then got himself elected to Congress. It's good old Jim, our old pal. And of course, he doesn't behave anything like that in Congress. But apparently those same culturally uncomfortable Ohioans that seem to want to vote Republican if you would forgive me, they appear to be very culturally uncomfortable with Jim Jordan, and I wouldn't call that a good thing.
Well, he seemed to emerge almost unscathed by the sex scandal in the wrestling program. But before you answer that, let me tell the listeners, you're listening to WGRN 94.1 FM. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. I'm here with John Hartman, free press reporter and really expert on Ohio politics and the media.
Well, you're very kind. And I want to, before I forget, I want to say it's been a distinct honor for me to write a column for the Columbus Free Press for the past, can you believe it, 5.5 years. And it is further a distinct honor for me to be on your program and to be part of the Free Press Network, which I think is a brilliant effort to package your multimedia efforts together. So it's a great pleasure and honor to be a small but enthusiastic part of it.
Well, we appreciate that. So the question is, why was he so unscathed? It seems like if that was a Democrat congressman, the Republicans would have made that a major issue.
Well, I think part of it, Bob, is because of the growing weakness of the traditional media in our state and around the country, as far as that's concerned. You know, it used to be that people, would subscribe to a local newspaper. They'd read about current events in their community. They would have some knowledge of what was going on and some knowledge of the people who were representing them at the various levels of government. But that seems to be something for a bygone era, because the major newspapers such as the Columbus Dispatch are shrinking before our eyes. The Columbus Dispatch, according to the legal advertisement that they have to publish every October, lost a third of their print circulation, so that their daily readership is now, of the print product, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000 people. It used to be 300,000 or 400,000 people. So people are not reading, people are not paying attention. And so the people in power, you know, can really get away with stuff that they couldn't get away with before, because there are very few people in the media now that are tasked with the responsibility of keeping people in power honest. I mean, the Dispatch, which in some ways under the Wolf family ownership had a horrible biased, approach to the news and certain people and certain issues, but they devoted a lot of time and a lot of space. They had a very lively editorial page. They devoted a lot of attention to opinion making in the community. And now the Dispatch is down to one editorial page. They don't have local editorials. They're running editorials from other newspapers. It's like a couple of guest columns and a cartoon and three or four letters to the editor, and that's it, you know. And so they're really de-emphasizing the role that the newspaper industry used to play to a large extent of opinion making, of stimulating discussion in the community, of raising controversies, of trying to keep people in power honest. Nothing has come along to replace them. Yeah, there's online information sources, there's television information sources, there's other ways that people get information, but they're not systematic, they're not regular. You know, it's not like the newspaper that's dropped on everybody's doorstep and everybody reads it the same day and everybody has access to the same base of information. The system of distributing information is very chaotic now. It's very inconsistent. Whereas many of us were raised to be aware, to be, I would call, civically aware We were raised to care about government. We were raised to care about politics. We were raised to pay attention. We were raised to try to get involved and to try to make things better. I'm told that they don't barely teach civics in high school anymore. And so, you know, many things have happened over the years that people are not paying attention. They're not involved. And of course, all these horrible negative advertisements that you see in any big race where, you know, they make monkeys out of people, where they ridicule people, where they vilify people, all this kind of stuff has turned the general public off. Why would you want to be involved in politics? Why would you want to run for office? Because they're going to say all these nasty things about you. So there's just been a whole bunch of factors out there that have contributed to the fact that larger amounts of the population are not paying attention. And I think that's why the Republicans are able to maintain a stranglehold on the politics in Ohio, even though it's full of corruption. Two out of the last four speakers of the House have had to resign because of the Ohio House, have had to resign because of corruption. We got this big investigation of this foundation or nonprofit that was created to fund politics that's going on in Ohio right now. We have all this corruption that the public should be aware of, and by and large, the public isn't aware of it. And so, you know, they just vote for the people in power and the people that have the money to tell them they're wonderful. And so they keep electing Republicans.
This is The Other Side of the News, and we're on WGRN 94.1 FM, also WCRS 92.7 and 98.3. We're also streaming live on WGRN.org. And I'm here with John Hartman, one of my favorite guys we're talking politics with, spends a lot of time thinking about it, but they haven't repealed the bribery bill there, the largest bribery scandal in the history of Ohio, $61 million. And those people are still around and acting like nothing happened.
Yes. And again, you would think the public would have wanted to throw out all the Republicans based on that. But no, they haven't. And so the Republican leadership, they believe if they'll just ride out the storm, let time pass, that they really don't have to make any changes. They really won't have to change the bill. They'll really be able to, you know, add more onto our electrical bills next year. And they'll go on their merry way, and you know, they'll all get reelected in 2022. And so the fact that the public isn't paying attention, the fact that the public isn't punishing the Republicans for their wrongdoing, simply emboldens the Republicans running Ohio to believe we can do whatever we damn well please, which is exactly what they're doing. It's a horrible situation.
And that includes not repealing HB 6. Just
exactly.
Let the bill that was the product of the greatest corruption scandal in Ohio history stay on the books there. But I mean, something else seems to be happening. I was downtown for one of the don't force me to wear a mask. You're treading all over me. And I've never seen so many guns in my life. I'm just, there was 1,000 people there fighting not to wear a mask, but virtually every guy had an AR-15 or an AK, and all the women that were with them were armed as well. Granted, they had pink, 45s and field guns, but I've never seen so many guns in my life. What culturally is bringing that backlash? We're talking about, is it the politics of identity that the Democratic Party has attached themselves to? Do these people feel there's some holy war? I mean, we had the report out of the one city in Ohio where their neighbors showed up with axe handles because they were having a Black Lives Matter rally.
It is rather amazing, and I can hardly get my head around what happened yesterday in Michigan, where the Republican electors showed up at the Michigan legislative building, okay, and demanded to be in, demanded to go in so that they could vote for Donald Trump. They actually showed up. There's pictures of them showing up and arguing with the guards. And fortunately, the guards were well informed. And they said, no, the Democrat electors are already here, and they're the only ones they're allowed to vote. And then I think I read another state, perhaps it was Arizona, where it sent some kind of a bogus, the Republican electors sent some kind of a bogus certificate to the Congress, you know, with the idea, well, we sent ours in first. Therefore, you have to count our votes. I mean, the lack of respect for democratic traditions that, you know, that you and I are grown up to absolutely believe in and absolutely support I wish I had an explanation for it beyond, you know, the culturally uncomfortable. It's like, people aren't paying attention. It's like people aren't educated. It's like people can't make rational decisions. It's like people can't tell right from wrong. It's like people can't tell fact from fiction. I've never been as alarmed about the attempts to, you know, put stuff on Facebook that isn't true and, you know, this kind of stuff, because I've always felt that people are smart enough to see that just because something's on a TV, on a screen, or on a piece of paper in front of them, it doesn't necessarily mean it's true. But I'm afraid I might be in the minority in believing that we don't need to be protected from this kind of stuff, because we ought to be smart enough to see when something is phony and not believe it.
I agree with you. We've got a couple minutes left, 2 minutes left. Anything else you'd like to share with the listeners on WGRN?
Well, I think that one of the things that gripes me a great deal is, you know, at our flagship university, Ohio State University, they have such an affection for secrecy. You know, they're representing us. It's our flagship university. The taxpayers of Ohio have put millions of dollars and do put millions of dollars into this university. And then when a citizen, one of those taxpayers, goes to Ohio State and says, hey, I want to know some information. I want to know about this. Oh, my gosh, we can't give you that. Or we'll put you through all kinds of hoops, you know, through a Freedom of Information request before you can find out what's going on. It just seems to me that the people in charge of our biggest institutions, the people in charge of our government, aren't really listening to us. They're just running their own kind of little secret operation. That secret operation, I think, is not good for, it's not good for society. It's not good for our state. I think it gives higher education a bad reputation. And I just wish they'd step up to the plate and be accountable to us 11 million, you know, taxpayers and residents of this fine state.
All right, John Hartman, free press writer, John Hartman, thanks for being on the other side of the news. And keep writing, my brother.
Hey, thank you. And thanks to you and Susan for all your support and encouragement and understanding over the years. I look for many more in the future.
Good.
All right.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.